It's a pleasure to welcome Marianne Fittler, who was up here last semester at PPIC, the Public Policy Institute of California, where a number of our graduates have gone to work. And Marianne is at UC Irvine in the Department of Economics and National Bureau of Economic Research. And she works on various topics in applied micro, including the effects of safety net programs on disadvantaged populations. And she's worked on infertility treatments. And today she's going to be talking about the role of the Vietnam draft in marriage markets, a time that some of us here remember firsthand. Okay. So Marianne, I should say, well, you've attended the Brown Bag before, so you should know the format, but go until one and you'll be interrupted, and then we'll have about 10 minutes of general discussion.
Okay, well, thanks for inviting me. Thanks everyone for coming. And I just want to issue one. So this is joint work with Lucy Schmidt. All errors are mine, of course. And one disclaimer, this was prepared for an economics audience, so it is almost surely delinquent in citations to relevant literatures that are more familiar to people in the room than me. Okay, so please forgive me for that in advance. And please do interrupt me. The handout has all the figures from the paper, and the table numbers in the presentation match up with that. So you can see all the coefficients that are going to be in the paper, not just the ones I've chosen to put up here on the screen. Okay, so let me start out with some motivation. So first of all, the Vietnam conflict was a defining event for a generation, as Ron said, maybe in the room. More than 8 million men served, and women, mostly men, served in the armed forces. A little less than half of them were deployed to Southeast Asia. And clearly this had effects not just on the people who served, but on those who did not. There is a large literature in economics, anyway, on the post-war effects of Vietnam-era service on various outcomes for men. A lot of it uses randomization from the draft lottery, which is not the main part of the variation that I'm going to use. So papers on earnings, health and mortality, crime, long-term residential mobility and divorce, and a little bit about the effects of draft deployments. The effects of the mobilization on family formation during the time of the conflict and the effects on women have been mostly ignored. In fact, in some of the papers, women are treated as a control group for what's going on to the men. This mobilization, however, led to a fairly large share of young men being absent from local marriage markets, and it was very concentrated in specific age groups. So it's plausible, at least I thought so before we started this project, that this disruption could have affected family formation in the short run, and we don't have evidence on this yet, although we're working on it, but maybe in the longer run. Okay? So I'm just going to touch on the economics literature on sex ratios. Again, this is probably where there's some glaring omissions. I apologize. So Becker's treatise on the family talks about, from an economics perspective, how you think about a balanced sex ratios affecting marriage markets, fertility, and assortative mating. So the basic idea here is some of the men are gone, so the men who are left are better off, and the women who are left are worse off. It should lead to changes in who gets married, so less fertility, less marriage, possibly more out-of-wedlock childbearing, and less bargaining surplus accruing to the women. Okay. So there's a empirical literature, this is just a selection from recent empirical papers in economics that talk about sex ratio effects. So papers on changes in immigration policy, incarceration, war-related male mortality, and then draft exemption policies for marriage and children in Vietnam. Martha Bailey, who visited here last year, has some work, and also a woman named Kutanova has a paper in 2009. Those draft exemptions mostly operated before the period I'm going to talk about. Okay? And then finally, World War II and the GI Bill. There's a recent paper by Marianne Page and some colleagues at UC Davis looking at assortative mating in that. Okay? So what do we think the expected effects of these mobilizations on family formation should be? Well, as I said, and I'll show you some evidence for this, the servicemen were tightly concentrated in specific age ranges. Low education men were more likely to serve, and while blacks were not more likely to serve overall, in some groups, in some states, they were as likely to serve as whites, okay? Women may have been less likely to marry or have children during the period when these men were gone, and it could have affected existing matches. However, these sex ratio imbalances are smaller and more temporary than the ones in the previous literature I talked about, okay? So part of the reason that motivates looking at the data from around the time this happened, looking at the detailed mortality data, which is a near universe of births, and hopefully we're going to extend this and look at the detailed marriage records, is, you know, maybe the effects are temporary and we'll wash out when we eventually go to look at the longer term outcomes in census data. Okay? So we thought if we can't find anything in the period data, it's hopeless to look for other stuff. So what do we do? In case I don't get through everything, we're going to exploit variation across states and over time in these Vietnam era deductions to analyze the effects of wartime mobilization on family formation. Just to give you a preview, we find preliminary evidence that a higher percentage of drafted men in a particular age group led to a significant decrease in birth rates. When we decompose this by the age of the women, the effects are amongst the women most likely to match with the men who are 19 to 25, and in fact, we find a decrease in births of women 20 to 24 with men who are 19 to 25, sort of further supporting the idea that it's what we think it is. You might worry that this is only the fact that these men are gone, but we actually find some evidence of an increase in birth rates of these young women with men who are slightly older than the men who were drafted. So that suggests that there's some changes in the matches going on, okay? So this is an outline of what I'm gonna do for the rest of the talk. First, there's a bit about the Vietnam draft. And again, people in the room may have stuff to tell me about that I don't know. This is mostly drawn from reading books about the draft and also a couple books about how to evade the draft. Then I'll tell you about our approach. I'll try to convince you that the inductions are exogenous and show you that induction risk is related to Vietnam veteran status in the census. And then I'll talk about fertility and then tell you where we are trying to take the paper next. Okay? So during the draft, the Selective Service System was used to obtain draftees. There's a three-tiered system. There's a national director, there's state directors, and then there's local draft boards. Men had to register with the Selective Service System at 18, and if you weren't deferred right away or unexempted, you had to report for a pre-induction examination if you were called. Those who passed were required to report for induction if they were notified, okay? So there were large failure rates, and failure rates were higher amongst blacks. So then everybody is knowledgeable probably about the deferments. Here's where the how to evade the draft part comes in. So for the very early part of the war, there were childless married deferments. So from 1963 to 65. There were paternity deferments, that's category 3A until 1970. And the combination of the marriage deferments and the paternity deferments is what Martha is looking at. There's also this paper by Kutanova in the Journal of Population Economics showing a spike in first births after, you know, appropriately after they announced the end of the childless married deferments. The funny anecdote, which probably doesn't have anything to do with this policy, but it's fun to say anyway, Dick Cheney's first child was born 9 months and 2 days after the announcement. An important thing to note is that the paternity deferments go the opposite way from the effects that I described. They're going to lead to more births, not fewer births with reductions. There were also educational deferments. Again, the guy I worked for, and my anecdote for this, the guy I worked for as an RA before going to grad school, went to graduate school in economics, purely because graduate school deferments would get him out of going to the military. Educational deferments, if you were in a four-year degree program and in good standing, new college deferments ended in 71, and there were graduate school deferments until 1968. These do potentially go in the same direction as what we're finding, they're relatively small, so if you think about the increase in expected education that's found in papers like Card and Lemieux, translate that into what kind of effect on births you'd expect to get, it's pretty darn small. Okay? And then there were some occupational deferments. Okay? So just to give you a sense of the stock, about 5% of the registered stock in 69 had these paternity deferments, and about 10% had the school deferments.
Okay? Registered stock here is?
Men who are in the right age group to potentially serve. So we can't, unfortunately.
Like 18 to 26?
Yeah, 18 to 26. So unfortunately, I don't have. It took some digging and data entry to get the stuff we have. We don't have great measures of the flows of everything that we would like to have. I'll tell you what we do have the flows for. And I've tried to do some stuff with the stocks to try to, you know, create artificial flows, and they don't look believable at all because there are people aging out and stuff, and some of the cohorts are changing over time. Okay. So a little more about the draft process for those who don't know about it. So the Secretary of Defense would ask the Selective Service for a certain number of men. They had some formula, which we haven't found yet exactly, that says how that would be allocated across states. Then at the state level, they issue requests to the local draft boards for a specific number of guys. In the first half of the war, men were at risk until they were 19, while they were 19 to 25, and at least legislatively, the stated order was that the oldest men were supposed to be called first. So this was similar to the way the draft worked in Korea in World War II, and the average age of guys drafted was around 23 during this period when this was the regime, okay? So the draft lottery starts in 1970 with a sense that it's more fair to use a lottery to allocate who's going to, at least I presume that that's the reason it was implemented. You are then only at risk for the calendar year you turned 20, and 1970 was a transition year. So then guys who hadn't been drafted previously were all given a lottery number if they were 19 to 25, okay? So this is a picture of total inductions by year over 1960 to 79. The data that we got are for fiscal years, and you can see here, you know, there's some drafts even in 1960, it ramps up in the 60 to 69 period, and then it starts to go down. You can also see something that at least was interesting to me, who'd seen so much about the draft lottery, was that in aggregate, the draft lottery was a really small share of the overall total number of drafts, guys drafted or inducted, okay? As I said, our empirical approach is going to exploit this variation in these inductions at the state and year level. And so first, I have to try to convince you that there is some variation we can take advantage of and that it's plausibly exogenous, okay? First, I'm going to show you a graph of some numbers across different states to show you that there is some variation across region and over time. I'm going to run some regressions to try to convince you that it's plausibly exogenous and, you know, to make sure it's not entirely predicted by other things one would think one would control for.
Are inductions all military signups or just draft inductees?
This is just draft inductees.
Okay.
That's the part that's, I think, plausibly exogenous. A lot more guys are enlisting to get out of serving. You know, using those numbers might not. You know, they're more selective. I mean, obviously, the drafted guys are selected in some way because if you fail, you can't serve.
I'm just worried that some states are getting a higher draft quota because they're not generating enough volunteers, which would then mess with your endogeneity.
Right. So the from what I can tell, in the aggregate anyway, enlistments and inductions are not negatively correlated.
Okay.
I can't show you great evidence of that at some other level because I just
right.
don't know.
Did you look, when you say that, did you look at the by service, by branch of service?
Almost all the drafted guys were in the Army.
Right, but that's why I was asking this, because the most people who enlisted tried to enlist in something other than the Army.
To avoid going, well, infantry anyway, you wanted to avoid infantry, clearly.
Right,
so,
right. The odd thing, of course, was the word people who enlisted in the Navy and were stupid enough to say that they wanted, that they were not against becoming a corpsman going into medical training, because all those guys went to support the Marines.
So I looked at overall the correlation broadly. It's a time series correlation. I'm not saying that I've looked at the state by year correlations in the way I'm going to show you the numbers for inductions, but broadly overall, total service as well as in the Army, they don't look, you know, if you plot them, they don't look negatively correlated. Okay, so here's the first thing. This shows you, and you can't see it too well. And unfortunately, I'm sure the graph for this is not very helpful. It's figure three, though. But this is inductions over the last 2 years for 100 men, 19 to 25. and it shows you some selected states. So how did I pick these states? Well, I tried to have some regional spread. I tried to pick the biggest and the smallest, and I just to give you some sense of the span of the data, okay? So what I see here when I look at this is I see that there's clearly time series variation. It's different across places. So in some places it's a lot smoother, in some places it's more jagged. There's some places that are bigger and smaller. You know, there's some regional variation that if you could see the color would be a little easier to pick out, but it's not all that the places at the bottom are necessarily what you might expect. So Alaska is at the bottom, and I think that's probably because they probably had more occupational deferments. West Virginia is the peak in 1969, but the variation other than that isn't necessarily, I think, what you would expect. So let me just add a few numbers here. So in 69, West Virginia is the highest at 9.2 guys per 100 guys of that age. Michigan is 8.6, Alabama is 6.7, California is 5.6, and Alaska is 1.5. Now there's nothing, you know, maybe there are, maybe someone has some hypotheses about how that's a systematic thing, but that seems relatively, you know, random to me and doesn't fit with what my priors would have been anyway. Okay?
Just in terms of the time series variation, I'm wondering how well that pattern would be fitted by just saying, well, each state has a level effect and there's a single time effect. And so looks like a lot of variation is just multiplicative.
Right, so I don't have the figure here, I don't think I have it in handout either, but we run it on state and year fixed effects, and look, and there's still variation left, for sure. I don't think it's in the figures in the paper.
In the multiplicative form?
So you mean just a time trend for states?
I mean time trend.
Right.
Say factor times fixed effect.
Yeah, so not with a linear time trend, with an unrestricted time trend.
With
so
an unrestricted time trend,
just dummies for
years,
yeah. Dummies for states, and there's still some variation across states. In some state, I mean, over the time period that I'm using the variation for, so it's lagged 1 year, so the birth started in 69, so the conception started in 68. But so most of these guys are, you know, most of the states are declining over the time period that I'm looking at, but there is still some variation left after that.
And I'm sorry, but when you say for 100 men, that's 8.5, is that net of deferments, or is that gross?
That here is until 68, it's using the number of guys from the 60 census who are in that cohort, and from 69 on, it's using SEER data. So, and again, if anybody knows anything about this, so SEER is this cancer data that's used to produce rates of people who have gotten cancer and are dying from it. It's constructed from the lodging census data. As near as I can tell, the SEER data excludes guys who are serving abroad. If they're just if you were deployed to Southeast Asia, you would not be in the data. The pattern is still true, though, for this variation I'm talking about. If I just use the denominators from the 60 census throughout, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes,
so
it does.
From 69 on, it's net of that. Before that, it's not, but it doesn't, in terms of there still being some variation left after taking out the year and fixed effects, it doesn't matter which way I do that. Mm-hmm. And if people have an opinion on which is the better way to do it, I'd be happy to get it, because we've kind of gone back and forth. I mean, the guys who are actually in the marriage market are, you know, not necessarily net of the deferments, but net of the enlistments, right? That's who's actually in your marriage market, or who's around, hasn't been deployed. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, if people are enlisting systematically, maybe you don't want to use them. You want to see what's the shock to the original stock net of whoever died between 1960 and the period I'm looking at. Okay, so may or may not have convinced you that there's some variation across states over time here. So now I want to talk about why I think this is idiosyncratic. And here, my co-author has read more of these books than me, so she would be more knowledgeable to talk about this, although I'm plunging into that. So our thought from reading all this stuff is that it's generated by this selective service system. So there are differences across states in how these federal policies are interpreted. There's a lot of idiosyncratic discretionary decision making by local boards, and there's lag in timing and information between these three tiers. Okay? So there's a lot of variation both within and between states, even amongst areas with similar socioeconomic characteristics. And in the paper, we have this interesting quote about Wisconsin. So talking about local boards in Wisconsin, tank truck drivers and we're given occupational deferments in some areas by the local draft boards, but not in others, even though they were all rural areas. So there's some idiosyncratic, at least in terms of the people who are writing about this historically, there's some idiosyncratic variation in terms of who's getting drafted where, okay? So then, I also want to run a regression to try to predict this and to make sure that, you know, I'm it's not totally predicted by the other things I'm going to control for, okay? So table one tells you what's the determinants of inductions for 100 men, 19 to 25, from 1960 to 73. So this is just the number of guys drafted for 100 guys of that age, regressed on a bunch of stuff over this time period. So what do we include? Well, the one thing that we can include that is at least predetermined that has to do with the war itself is casualties per 100,000 guys, and we lag that by a year, okay? Then we include other things that we think are important determinants of fertility, so abortion, legalization, pill access, the unemployment rate, welfare benefits, real manufacturing wages, real per capita income. So all things that are, you know, correlated at least in some literatures with fertility behavior. And then we did a little digging around to see what else we could actually find. Now the hard part about this is between 1960 and 1970, there's not a lot of things that you can get at the state by year level. So educational attainment in your state, that would be great, right? But that is available in 1960, 1970, and then from then on, you know, you could get it from the CPS. But in the in-between period, we would have to do linear interpolation and stuff. Okay. I'm sorry, and stuff doesn't sound very technical. We'd have to do linear interpolation or something else to account for the fact that we don't have actual, you know, data to put in there. Okay, we've tried, so things people have raised is maybe depending on who runs the government in your state, that affects where the deferments happen or where who gets called. So we tried controlling for that because you can get stuff about the political makeup of the state at the state by year level. Tried controlling for incarceration rates. These two things don't matter at all. Tried education from 60 or 70 interacted with a state trend over the relevant time period, so a state linear trend. That has a big point estimate, but doesn't affect some of these other things. So, and then casualties, abortion legalization, the unemployment rate, and welfare benefits are statistically significant. And the effect of casualties is pretty small in magnitude, but it's significant. And you also see it shows up in some of the fertility regressions later, okay? So just to be clear, we're gonna control for all these things that are in the first bullet in the regressions, all the regressions that I'm gonna show you, okay? So there's nothing that's glaringly missing here that you think should be used to control for inductions, but given that we're going to control for all these, that they don't have a very large effect in terms of predicting the number of drafts, hopefully you're somewhat convinced by this combined with the historical evidence that inductions are somewhat exogenous anyway. Okay. So the next thing that we want to do is make sure that our risk variable is correlated with Vietnam-era veteran status. Right? We want to show you that this actually predicts veteran status. So if there were complete trade-off of guys not enlisting in order to avoid being drafted, if these things were negatively correlated, is what I mean to say, then you wouldn't expect Vietnam-era draft status would be correlated with the induction risk. Okay, so this takes census data from 1980, and it regresses, are you a Vietnam-era veteran on your birth fixed effects, state fixed effects, race, and then our induction risk variable. Summed up over the years, you would have been at risk. So if the draft that was in effect for you in a year was that you were at risk while 19 to 25, and you were between 19 to 25, that gets added to your induction risk. If it was a year when you're only at risk when you were 20, then it only adds on that for you if you're 20 then, okay? So you sum that up across the years, an individual man would have been at risk over this period of 41 to 53, and what do we find? So overall, there's a statistically significant relationship between the two. I don't show you that, but it's in the tables. And then we break it out by education. Again, trying to look at other literatures that predict, you know, who was likely to be a veteran. Okay. So some correlation significant at the 10% level for the high school dropouts. The biggest impact is for the high school graduates. That's consistent with this actually picking up guys who were drafted, because if you had, you know, one of the ways to fail was to do poorly enough on the various IQ-like tests, right? And so this part makes sense, and then this also is consistent with our, at least we think it's consistent with our interpretation that we're really picking up something that's moving around the risk of being a veteran. People who were in college were much less likely to serve than guys who were not in college. Okay? So that's the end of the stuff I'm going to say about exogeneity of draft status. So if you have questions about that, now is the right time for them. And if not, I'll move on to fertility results. Okay. So fertility. First, I already told you this mostly, but so we entered these from these reports, these inductions by state and year. They're reported for the fiscal year level, I mean for the fiscal year for all races by state. So we don't have by race specific ones. If we did, we would use them, but we don't. We sum this across 2 years. Why do we do that? Well, typically Vietnam is also different from World War II and some other wars. In some of those other wars, if you were drafted, you served for the duration and then you came back. Okay. In Vietnam, there was this strict policy of one-year tours, and obviously some people went back more than once, but you know, for a lot of these guys, they were going off to basic training, then they were getting some specialized training, then they were gone for a year, and then they were done. So that's why we sum the draft risk across 2 years. Okay. We set it to zero from 74 on. Why 74? Well, the draft ends in 73, but we're using a lag because of conception, okay? And then we're using SEER data for the denominator over this period, and it's merged to the point before the birth to account for gestation, okay? So that's that key variable. The other data is what I'm sure is familiar to everybody in the room, the vital statistics detailed mentality data from 1969 to 1979 from state birth certificates. It's a near universe of births. It's count. So what do? We sum up the counts of births by single year of age of mother and race, month and year, and state of residence. Okay. There are some states that are only a half sample of this time period. We multiply those births by two. Okay. The denominators come from SEER. So what I'm going to present you is birth rates per 1,000 women. And there are a bunch of other characteristics of the birth, for which unfortunately we don't have the right denominators to do the right thing. But what I'm going to show you is the number of births of that type per 1,000 women in the race, age, state, year cohorts. Okay? So father's age, which is what I'm going to use to create this stuff about the kind of matches that you're getting. And then you know mom's race. For some states, you know marital status. For some states, you know education. And then you have parity. I'm only going to look at all births and first births. And you know, if we had the right denominators for some of these other groups, we would use them. But again, we face this challenge that we have great numerators and crappy denominators for some of the things we like to look at. Okay. So the other controls, casualties, lagged, abortion legalization, and early legal access to the pill. And we need to add some of the more recent coding Martha Bailey has done that has age-specific measures of this. And then these other things that I've told you I was going to put in the regressions that control for changes in fertility or other things that have been thought to predict fertility behavior or affect marriage markets. Okay? So the dependent variables are log birth rates per 1,000 women. The results that I'm going to show you are robust to using levels. We're going to do some count data regressions at some point. We just haven't done it yet. You know, previous research has shown that marriage markets are defined narrowly by age, race, and geography. Average age gaps in this time period and the data that we're looking at are 2 to 3 years. Unfortunately, we don't have inductions per single year, and so we can't be as specific as one might like to be, although then you're still making an assumption about what the appropriate age marriage market is for a woman who's a particular age. So we're going to try to be agnostic about which group should be affected. We're going to use this measure of overall induction risk for the men 19 to 25, and then stratified by women's age, and sometimes by women's age, as well as the age of the men with whom the women had the births, okay? So we're expecting to see effects mostly for women who are 17 to 23 with some spillovers, okay? 17 to 23, men are 2 to 3 years older than the women, and so that makes the men the right age to have potentially been drafted, okay? So other regression details, we're merging the abortion laws by the end of the first trimester. The other controls are merged by the calendar year of conception. And we have fixed effects for single year of mom's age, mother's race, state, and year and month of birth. Sometimes it's year separately from month fixed effects, and sometimes it's year by month fixed effects. We're going to do weighted regressions here. And the standard errors are clustered at the state level. Okay? So this is the first regression. It's table 5 in the handout. So it's the determinants of births per 1,000 women 15 to 29. So I'm only telling you the sum of the coefficients, the one coefficient that I'm most interested in here, but you can see the other ones in the table if you want to. So column one, I'm not reporting. That's just a specification with only controls for drafts and casualties. Column two adds the race dummies and controls for abortion and the pill. Column three adds the other contextual variables I told you about. And then column four, instead of state fixed effects and year fixed effects, it has state fixed effects and then year by month fixed effects. So, you know, less restrictive in terms of the variation over time, okay? So what you see here is a increase of one guy drafted for 100 guys of the relevant age leads to a decrease in the birth rate between 1.6 and 2%. And it's statistically significant. There's not a huge amount of variation across these columns, okay? But this is all women 15 to 29, and we might not expect all of them to respond, okay? So now I'm gonna break it up by, first I should probably say something about these magnitudes. So there's a bunch of ways you can think about these magnitudes, right? You like to think about percent, you got percent there. The mean birth rate for people 15 to 29 in this data is 8.2 per thousand. So if you want to think about what this means in terms of numbers of births, it's about 0.14 to 0.18 fewer births per thousand women that this is accounting for. If you want to think about the average draft rate in the data, it's about 2.6 men per 100 men. So if you think about that, that's a decrease around 7% over the time period from 69 to 74.
How did you do that last week?
I just multiplied the percent effect times the number of births. So I probably should be the number of births at the beginning before any of this happened.
I'm just confused. You said something about 7%.
Right,
it was 2.6%.
So,
years involved.
Sorry,
I expect.
I should have made a slide for this. The average draft rate over the period is 2.6 guys per 100 guys. Okay. Uh-huh. So if I take the 2.6 times these numbers, that's going to give me a number that's close to. I might have written down the wrong thing, actually. Yeah, I wrote down the wrong thing. So 4.2 to 5.2%.
Okay.
That's more of that envelope that you were doing.
Right.
I was just reading the wrong thing. And then just to give you one other way to think about it, if you were to go from the median state draft in 69 to the state with the highest draft, which I already told you was West Virginia, that would be a change from about 6 guys per 100 who were drafted to 9 guys per 100 who were drafted. That leads to a decrease of between 5.2 and 6.5%. And finally, the last way that I could think of to see if this was ballpark crazy, if it had been bigger than the effects of abortion, I probably would have thought it was not. Mm-hmm. I was picking something else up, okay? So if you look at the effects of abortion legalization in the tables, you see it's between 4 and 5%, okay? So it's around the same size overall. So then you want to go to the age-specific regressions, okay? So the next table, so all of the other tables have the same format in the handout. First column is always with very few controls. The second column adds race and abortion and the pill. The third one adds the contextual stuff, and the fourth one is year by month instead of year fixed effects and months fixed effects separately, okay? So now I'm gonna go to table 6. The table that I gave you in the handout has the all births one at the top, but I couldn't fit that all in the slide, so this is what you're gonna get to see. What you see here is amongst women who are 20 to 24, there is a statistically significant decrease in the birth rate that's ballpark similar to the numbers from the previous table, okay? Fairly robust across the columns, not a lot of variation in how big the parameters are. If you look at that's panel C here. If you look at panel B, which is births for women who are 20 to 24, with men who are less than or equal to 18, there you see the coefficients are consistent with an increase, but they're not statistically significant, so I want to attribute a lot to them, okay? And then, if you look at the births that are of the women who are 20 to 24 with men who are 26 or older, you see in at least two of the columns some evidence that there's an increase in births of women 20 to 24 with men in that group. So that is what we're taking as our evidence that this is more than just a remove the guys and there are fewer births effect. This is suggesting that there are more kids being born that are from pairs of the younger women with slightly older men than there were before. Okay? So then I turn to the women who are 25 to 29, who still some of them have some overlap with this age group. So here, births of the women 25 to 29 with the men 19 to 25, you know, maybe that you could interpret that as some evidence that there's also a decrease in births in that age group. Men over 26, nothing going on. And the other category I didn't talk about are, and I should have said this before I got to the slide, but you don't know the age of the man for every man because not all of the male information is on the birth certificate, okay? So this is only using the ones where I actually know something about the age of the men, and then I have an age of man not reported, which is a proxy for there were no characteristics for the man on the birth certificate, and then for a small number there were other characteristics for the man on the birth certificate but not the age, okay? So for neither the 20 to 24-year-old women nor the 25 to 29-year-old women is that it's statistically significantly correlated with the induction. Okay. So then the oldest women, 30 to 44, the data actually includes 45 to 49, but I've left it out because there just aren't that many births to that group in this time period. No significant effects in most of the specifications. Of 15 coefficients, one coefficient where the men are 26 or older and the women are 30 to 44 is positive and significant at the 5% level. Okay. So I interpret this as no evidence that there's anything going on for the older women, but you can look at the table and sort of decide for yourself. Finally, also interesting is the births to the women who are 15 to 19. Okay, so here we were also expecting to see a significant decline with the men who were 19 to 25, and we were a little surprised when we didn't find it until we looked at the results for age of man missing, where there's a big decrease in births where the age of the man was missing with women who are 15 to 19. Okay. So the story that's consistent with this is the 20 to 24-year-olds are perhaps not as likely to be married, but certainly you know, less likely to have births with these guys where the guy's around long enough to show up on the birth certificate, okay? But for these younger women, these are guys who weren't around in the first place, okay? They were, you know, they were only around long enough for the pregnancy to start, and then they don't show up on the birth certificate at all, okay? So that's a consistent interpretation with our thesis across these results, okay? So I also have some results by education and marital status. The problem here is a lot of states don't report education, a lot of states don't report marital status, and some of the ones that do report marital status do some reputations based on things that may or may not have been problematic at the beginning of the period, like did people have the same last name? I think that's what California did over this time period, but certainly by the end, by 1979, that might have been a somewhat problematic way to sort of decide marital status, okay? But results by education, negative and significant effects for high school graduates who are 20 to 24. Results for first births, there are negative and significant effects for women who are 50 to 19, 25 to 29. Negative but not statistically significant, you know, close to being significant at the 10% level for women who are 20 to 24. Married results, mostly negative, which is consistent with the sex ratio theory. And then the unmarried results, negative and significant for women who are 15 to 19. And then this somewhat intriguing, but not sure I want to hang my hat on it, result of positive and significant effects for women in their 20s. Now, sex ratio theory would suggest more, at least as Becker describes it, would suggest more unmarried births when the sex ratio is more advantageous for men. But that's one result out of many, okay?
This results by parity. Did you actually look at each parity separately, or do you mean you put in a control variable?
No, I mean, we looked at first births. So the biggest group is first births. We didn't look at second births. We could look at second births and third and higher. But so far, all we've done is look at first births. So first birth per 1,000 women is the outcome that we're looking at. Do you think it would be?
Well, I'm guessing that you'd have much, as you expect, you'd have much bigger effects for first births than for second and third. I guess second and third, there'll be some married vets who are absent, and maybe, but it just might be a little bit of a shred of confirmatory evidence.
Sure, no,
say,
it's,
oh,
a,
it's
that's
only
a fair
for
point. Yeah. We should probably look at second and higher births. And then, so these are the interesting things from the robustness, I mean, from the other things we've done, and then there's the obligatory table of other things we did to beat on the results and didn't make them go away. So we tried year of conception fixed effects as well, in case you're concerned that we're merging these variables in at different times. That should also be somewhat taken care of in specifications where you have year by month fixed effects. Okay. We've tried looking just at whites. The groups of blacks and others are so small in this data that, you know, so the panel becomes not very complete when you look at blacks or other race, but whites, the results are very consistent. We've included linear state-specific time trends. It doesn't matter. If you're concerned about stuff about abortion, so for example, maybe you're worried that really somehow we don't do a good job of measuring abortion access or something. We've run regressions where we leave out the states who were the early legalizing states, so New York, California, et cetera. We've run only pre-Roe, and the results are robust to that. We've run levels regressions instead of logs, so if you don't like logs, maybe you like levels better. We haven't run count data ones yet, but we will. We've tried the induction risk at 1 year or 3 years. We've tried an alternate denominator for risk, so using the 60 census denominators for the men. I think that's it for my list of things I'm going to say we did. So that's what we've done so far, and if there are other controls that people think that belong in these regressions, or...
Might it be... Did you look at any interactions? Like, I'm thinking maybe you have... Maybe the availability of abortion makes births more responsive. So a guy gets you pregnant and then disappears and you abort instead of carrying it to term or something like that.
Yeah, no, we haven't done that, and that's something we ought to do too. And maybe that would make sense for the unemployment rate too, I could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
That could have some important effect. I think for the other variables, not so much.
You don't have a contraceptive prevalence or something, I can't quite remember.
No, what we have is early access to the pill from Martha's paper, which tends to, I think that she has a new coding for that, which we should use, and we're also not using an age-specific version of it, so it's just as their early pill availability in your state, and it tends to not be. So what I probably should have said earlier, the abortion effects that we find are very robust and similar to sort of the other economics literature, or Phil Bean and the other folks who've looked at these kinds of things. So very similar to Levine and Stager and other results in terms of the magnitudes. The pill stuff is not so robust across everything, but as I said, we're not, you know, we don't have the most up-to-date version and we're not making it age-specific yet, so we should do that. We just haven't gotten to it yet.
So do you have any idea where men migrate to after they serve? So I'm just thinking that people that are from West Virginia that get drafted might be a lot less likely to return to West Virginia.
Right. So there's actually another paper which, you know, we had this idea of broadly looking at Vietnam, and then my co-author Lucy saw this paper by Abney Wozniak and Ofer Malamud that looks at migration and draft status and education, and I don't know more than they use the same state-level variation. They do a shift-share model instead, so we're not doing that, but, you know, for their purposes, they need an instrument. I don't think we feel confident enough to be instrumenting here because, you know, it's not clear the exclusion restriction is perfect, so we're sticking to reduced form. So the reason we start in 69 instead of 68 is actually because you don't get age of dad till 69, and you don't get even state of birth of the mom the whole time through the panel, so we opted to have a longer panel with more overlap with when the war was going on versus knowing more about where the people live. Now, in census data, which is the on My conclusions first. I think I've shown robust evidence that Vietnam-era inductions lead to lower birth rates for young women, particularly amongst women of the right age to have been with the men who were drafted, and amongst the births of women of that age with men of that age. Okay, so the effects were biggest in the groups that should have been the most affected. There's some evidence of crowd-in, so to speak, more men, older men having kids with these women when the younger men are gone, and then stuff to do. So one of the things we want to do is look at these longer-run effects on fertility timing, number of children ever born, shotgun marriages, using either the 80 census or the 90 census. So in 90, we would have completed childbearing. In 80, we could do something like, you know, are you with a Vietnam-era vet now? Okay, and you have time of first marriage and age of oldest child in the house, not the oldest child you have. So we can look at some of these outcomes in the 80 and 90 census to see whether there are these long-run effects. And there, I think we would want to use state of birth of the guys, if you know it, to get around this endogenous integration that I think you're trying to be a little concerned about. The other thing we can do, in addition to maybe extending this to earlier years, is to use the detailed marriage data. So many of these predictions hold for marriage markets too, and you know we just haven't gotten to that yet, but I think this would make it more compelling to find similarly consistent effects in marriage data that we're finding in the fertility data. Okay, that's all I have. Any more questions or comments?
So, further questions and comments?
I have one more. So, I thought it was interesting with the information of the father missing from the birth certificate. I'm wondering, if you looked at just the probability of that father's information being missing, kind of, would this be an So I'm thinking of it as if you remove a lot of men from the marriage market, then the men that are around are better off, and so they might be less, I guess, less willing to commit to some of the.
Yes, no, I think that's exactly what these specifications. So you're saying if I run a regression for birth is missing dad information
right.
overall, and I think we ran that at some point. I just don't remember what it shows. So, but I think the fact that you know the age of men missed the number of births, I actually think the aggregated version of that is this. When I think about this harder, so the fact that this thing is only responding for the youngest women, I think is. I'm sure one could come up with another story, but I think it's certainly consistent with the story that we're trying to tell, which is, you know, for the young women who are always having sex with the older guys, they're having fewer of these out of wedlock kids who, you know, where the guy is totally not present. Whereas for slightly older women, it's more a matter of you know, not having at least stable enough couplings to lead to the man being on the birth certificate.
Do you take advantage of information on sex differences in the population? Just some places have more men per woman than others. I don't know that they're huge at state level, but certainly local level.
So, this is state level. Everything's at the state level because that's the level at which we have the denominators.
There should be some even at state level.
Yeah, no, there's definitely variation in the sex ratio before the guys are gone.
Yeah, right.
So the hope is that the state fixed effects are capturing some part of that, or the state specific linear time trends are capturing
that.
That's not one of the things we've looked at, and it's mainly because, as I said, I think we're sort of uncomfortable with the idea of instrumenting for the sex ratio. I guess we could control for the sex ratio before the war, maybe, and then run these specifications. But that would not vary over time, or except by your birth cohort. So it would only vary by birth cohort. So as I said, this is more of a, you know, a reduced. So, you know, if you think that the effects of this thing are linear, taking a guy out shouldn't matter how many guys there were. That's probably not an ideal assumption, but that would be an assumption that's consistent with these results being okay.
I find this quite persuasive and interesting, but I'm wondering how you're going to spin this or present it, or if you were writing an NIH grant proposal under significance, you know, what would you say about the broader implications of this analysis?
So it's more evidence about the importance of changes in the sex ratio. It importantly suggests that, you know, this large component of missing men, modulo that I want the interactions, and it doesn't change anything with abortion coefficients. We thought we knew a lot about what abortion meant. If the abortion coefficients had changed a lot, that might have suggested we were misinterpreting that. And then I can't tell you, but once we've run, if we see nothing in the longer run, it suggests removing these guys for a short period doesn't really affect long-run fertility or family formation. If we find that it does have an effect, it suggests relatively short-term disruptions could have large effects. Since I haven't run those yet, I can't tell you which part I would say into the significance.
The questions about that you touched on in the beginning about possible effects on the division of against a marriage or whatever, those kinds of things, is it unrealistic to think you might be able to find something where these sort of shocks just too small? And is that the sort of thing that's already been covered in that literature that you started out citing, not all of which I'm familiar with?
Some of it has been covered in that literature, but again, those were sort of long-term, you know, permanent disruptions. So the paper that I mentioned, that's the guy at Stanford and his co-authors, they look at huge differences across areas in France in World War I.
He actually presented that here as a problem.
So they had much bigger permanent differences. So they, I think, are in better position to sort of see long-run effects. Haven't done a formal power calculation since I knew you would want to run the other regressions anyway. But, you know, I think it's certainly possible that, particularly maybe for these youngest women, if you avoid having a kid when you're 15 to 19 with a guy who's not around, you know, maybe we can capture that. We'll see. The data has yet to speak.
Are there other questions or comments? Thank you very much.